Ez egy imádó, mert jó csomó, én csak azt jelenti. Jó csomó, hogy el, ennek a szívem jó arra, mert jó csomó, hogy nem jelenti, hogy már nem egy helyet, ez egy kívban, és én csinál rá. Jó, hogy csinál, halál, jutom, hogy egy működ lélem mellett, hogy mit fél elejét, nem csak akkor jár. Úgy tudom, hogy tudom jár, hogy tár, hogy nem csak, vagy nem, hogy én egy kívban csinál. Ennyi,
Good evening. So this afternoon we started to look at the beings of the three scopes or three capacities, small, middling and great capacity. And we looked at, in particular, in some detail, at what is, first of all, what is meant by a being who is of small capacity. And then we spoke about the path that a being of small capacity cultivates. Or in other words, what their motivation is, and what minds they then cultivate in meditation. So we heard that a being of small capacity is a being who is striving to ensure that in their very next rebirth, they do not fall into the lower realms, but attain a good rebirth, a rebirth as a human or a god. And then the practices they engage in, the path of the being of a small capacity, is primarily guarding their, firstly guarding their ethical conduct, which means developing a mind of restraint, committing not to harm others. And this has the ripening effect of a rebirth as a human or a god. And then to ensure that they have good conditions in their future rebirth, they engage in the practice of developing the wish to give. In other words, a practice of generosity. And we heard there are three types, material, giving of fearlessness, giving of the Dharma. And then thirdly, they engage in the practice of patience, which is the mind that remains undisturbed in the face of adversity. So that was the third practice. And then these three, they get combined or get powered by the mind of joyous perseverance, the mind that delights in engaging in virtue. So those that's a path that is practiced by the being of small capacity, and the being of small capacity has the motivation of attaining a good rebirth in their next life. Now we'll look at the being of intermediate capacity or being of middling capacity. So being of intermediate capacity has a very different goal from the being of small capacity. Such a practitioner is striving for liberation from cyclic existence in its entirety, or liberation from samsara in its entirety. This is the goal of the being of middling capacity. So before we look at the causes to achieve liberation, what is meant by liberation? So liberation is attaining a true cessation of having abandoned the afflicted mind together with their seeds. So that is what is meant by liberation. And then what is one liberated from? So one is liberated from suffering, or one is liberated from the suffering of cyclic existence, from samsara. So one is liberated from the suffering of samsara by attaining true cessations, which are the complete abandonment of the afflicted minds together with their seeds.
Mm-hmm.
If someone who has committed a crime and convicted, they get imprisoned. So a prisoner then remains within the confines of the prison grounds in their cell, and they cannot go out and enjoy the delights of freedom because they are bound within their prison. But when they've served their sentence and their time is up and they are freed, they're freed from their prison, then they can go and enjoy being liberated from prison. They can enjoy the freedom of being liberated from prison. So this is similar to what we mean by liberation or freedom. So let's look at the situation of ourselves and of all human beings. When we look carefully at our existence, or even if we look coarsely at our existence, but certainly when we look in detail, we see that our life is very unstable in that we meet problems and difficulties one upon the other. We have problems in our family life, we have problems with our partner, problems with our children, or if we're on our own, we're sometimes lonely. And when we go to work, we're earning a living and this is required, but then we also have problems at work with our employees or with customers. Always problems there too. We meet friends, and sometimes we get on with them, but occasionally there are problems with our friends too, or they do things that annoy us, and we look the other way, but still it's a bit annoying. So in every walk of life, we experience unwanted difficulties. And sometimes these can be quite severe, such as if one is struck down by a great illness. So in our human existence, we experience so many problems and difficulties. And when one attains a state of liberation, one is liberated from all of these problems, which means one will never experience them again. One is liberated from all suffering, all problems, all difficulties, to the extent that one will never experience any problems again. And therefore, all that is left are experiences of happiness. And then this happiness is not the temporary happiness we experience now, but it's a stable happiness. It's a stable mental peace that is uninterrupted because one no longer or never again will experience problems and difficulties.
Sisan jeli ya matar wadhe ghar jene thaa wadhe lakna pina wadhe jige sem jen luji thakwa jige daa shabayi na
When we've reflected on the suffering experiences of samsara and come to understand this well, we'll want to be freed from this. So liberation then is a state where one is freed from all suffering, freed from the sufferings of samsara. So if we take an illustration of an animal that is tethered to a rope, maybe a horse or a dog or a bird, they can only have as much freedom as that length of rope gives them. Beyond that, they cannot go. They are bound by this rope. However, should someone cut the rope, or should they chew through it or peck through it, then they will have attained freedom from this bondage and they can fly or run away. So this then is similar to us. We are bound within the prison of samsara. So what the prison that we are in is our samsaric experience, our samsaric existence. This is where the confines that we are trapped within and we cannot move beyond. What keeps us trapped in here and what prevents us from moving beyond these confines? This is not some external rope or chain keeping us bound within this prison, but it's our own minds. And in particular, not all our minds, but in particular, the afflicted minds or the destructive emotions. These afflicted minds, they are what bind us within our samsaric experience. Now, afflicted minds, there are a vast variety of these minds. So they can include minds such as anger or subclasses of anger such as frustration and annoyance. Then minds such as attachment and desire and jealousy, and as well as pride and ignorance, all of these are afflicted minds or destructive emotions. And these are what bind us within samsara. And it's these minds that prevent us from attaining liberation. It's these minds that we need to destroy so as to attain liberation, so as to attain freedom, so as to destroy samsara. So again, the causes for being trapped within samsara are these very minds, and it's these minds that we need to destroy so as no longer to be trapped, no longer to be bound within this prison of samsara.
I'm not
The starting point then in the mental development or the meditation for a being of intermediate capacity is the same practices as we heard about this afternoon for the being of small capacity. So these practices are shared, they're common to both types of practitioner. But then, so having meditated then on on impermanence and that our life will end, and generated the mind of refuge, seeing the sufferings of the lower realms, and seeing the sufferings that animals experience and giving rise to a strong wish to be born as a human, then that's what's shared with the being of small capacity. But then in addition to this, the practitioner then goes on to look further and see that actually it's not just these lower realms where beings suffer. The existence of humans and gods too are pervaded by suffering. And then now the unique meditation of the being of middling capacity is to meditate on the situation of humans and gods, in other words, the happier migrations, the pleasant rebirths, and come to see that wherever one is born within samsara, one just experiences problem after problem after problem. So we can approach this from looking at the human existence, because this is what we have experience of. When we think about it, we certainly are aware of our own problems. And we will look at the lives of many others, maybe the people we know, we see on the news, and we can see the problems they're experiencing. But yet we'll still see life of others, and of some, and we may aspire to such a life. Maybe they have comfortable conditions, or they have great talents, whatever it is. But we look at the lives of others and think, oh, that looks better than what I have. But we need to look at far more detail and come to see that all humans, no matter where they are born or what circumstances they have, they still experience unwanted problems continuously. Whether it's illness, no one plans for illness, no one goes out and buys illness, but it befalls us. Likewise, everyone experiences problems in terms of relationships. Relationships with loved ones, relationships with work colleagues, relationships, problems in relationships with people that you don't know very well, just acquaintances. But everyone has difficulties in relationships. And then similarly, even alone with one's own thought process, here we experience problems as well. And the problems that come from not getting things that we want, or situations that we want, outcomes that we want. The problems that come from meeting the unwanted, of meeting someone we don't like very much, or being in a situation we don't want to be in. So The meditator here, she investigates in great detail the sufferings that human beings experience, not just the course obvious external sufferings, but the inner sufferings as well. And doing this in great detail, coming to the point of seeing that there is no happiness anywhere. No happiness anywhere within samsara. There is no rebirth, there's no nothing that can be bought that will achieve lasting happiness. As long as one is trapped within samsara, there is no lasting happiness. Rather, problem after problem, suffering upon suffering befalls one. So this is the key meditation of the being of middling capacity. The stronger this meditation is in terms of the result that the power of the result that arises in the mind, the stronger that one sees that there is no peace to be found within samsara. There is no essence or no value to be found within samsara, no lasting value, no real essence. The stronger that realization is, the stronger the wish to be liberated from the suffering situation. The stronger that one sees that there is no peace in samsara, the stronger the wish to be liberated completely from samsara will arise. So the meditation first starts off with the practices of the being of the small scope, and then progresses to the first of the unique meditations to the being of, the first of the meditations of the being of middling capacity that are not shared with the being of small capacity. And that was to meditate on the suffering of the happy migrations of humans and of gods. Then, coming to see that samsara is pervaded by suffering, giving rise to a strong wish to be completely freed from suffering, but not just the normal wish that we have, but a wish that pushes one to change one's way of thinking, change one's behavior. This then leads one to the next step in the meditation, which is to think about the cause of our suffering. Why are we suffering? Where does the suffering come from? Where do all these unwanted conditions come from? The problems of the problems that we experience in life, where do these come from? Whether we are on our own or we're with others, there's these constant problems of unhappiness that we experience. Where does this come from? Here we investigate and we see that the our problems all come from our own afflicted minds. And the negative karma that these minds create. All our suffering without exception, comes from our own afflicted minds and the karma that they create. And if we were therefore able to eliminate these afflicted minds completely, we will not suffer anymore and we will not create negative karma anymore. So here, the next step of the meditation is to identify the cause of our suffering. And the cause is primarily our own afflicted minds. Secondarily, it's the karma that the minds create. But the reason the afflicted minds are seen as primary is because when they are eliminated, we are liberated. We no longer remain trapped in samsara because it is these very afflicted minds that keep us trapped in samsara.
Conor Sion, Conor Dio, and then she
So this is something we can understand very easily. We can understand very easily on a coarse level. For example, when we are overcome by anger, no one's happy then. when the mind is dominated by anger and our face is red and our eyes are big, we are clearly not happy. And if there's someone in front of us, whether they are the source of our anger or not, if they're just unlucky enough to be there, they are going to get it from us. We're going to talk to them in a way that we'll later regret. We may even physically beat them. Or if we have something like a cup around us, we'll throw it against the wall and break it. This is very easy to see. We have some experience of this. This shows that the afflicted minds are what causes us our suffering. So on a coarse level, we can understand this very clearly. And similarly, the afflicted mind of attachment, we can also clearly see the faults that come from attachment. So let's say we have strong attachments or desire for an object. So the first thing that happens is the mind of desire or attachment arises for that object, and that object dominates our mind. So whether it's a possession that we'd like to purchase, or it's another person that we'd like to have a relationship with, the wish to obtain this object is so strong that it dominates our mind. We're not thinking about anything more worthwhile. We're just thinking about this. It dominates our mind. Then, if someone else has that object and we want it, we don't like that other person. Or if they were to purchase something better than we have, we're not very impressed with it. Jealousy arises and we have a negative view of this person. Or if we're striving to get someone, maybe have a relationship with a person or to purchase something, and our wishes aren't fulfilled, they don't want a relationship with us, or we can't purchase the thing, then we become unhappy. And this all started out from this afflicted mind of attachment, of wanting something. This mind that puts our own needs first. And something else, another illustration to make this clear, say a school pupil who's striving hard to get a good mark at school. In fact, they don't just want a good mark, they want to be top of the class. And they're studying very hard, making great efforts, and then they don't come first. The exam doesn't go as well as they wanted. Then they're disappointed with themselves. Their mind becomes dispirited and upset. And then they get angry. They may even give up their studies. Oh, this subject is not good for me. I'm not good enough. Or in some cases, children even take their own lives. So this too comes from this mind of attachment. So it's another affliction that on a coarse level, we can clearly see the harm that follows. These two afflicted minds, attachment and anger, are both powerful negative minds. But amongst the two, the one that we have greatest familiarity with is the mind of attachment. This mind arises very easily, and it arises on the basis of almost any kind of object. And usually when it arises, we actually don't even notice, because we think we are happy. And we see this mind of desire, this mind of attachment, as something that we want and we would like to experience. So for example, when we're out with our friends and we're having a good time, attachment arises. If we're watching sport and our team is doing well, attachment arises. Or if we're watching something else that we enjoy, a television or a film or a play, attachment arises. Something that rises very, very easily. We just need to see or hear something pleasant, attachment arises. And it arises so easily, and we are so used to it, so habituated to it, that we don't recognize its arisal. Problem, though, with attachment is from this mind. So the first problem is how easily it arises. The second is that we don't recognize it easily. Thirdly, from this mind of attachment, so many other afflictions arise. So from attachment, pride comes. From attachment, anger can come. From attachment, minds such as deceit, dishonesty can arise. So if one is attached to something, and one desires something, but someone else takes that, and maybe there's the last object in the shop and someone else buys it and we really wanted it, we're going to get upset. Because we wanted that. Or we were saving up to buy something, we go to the shop, and it's now got more expensive, or the sale is over, we're not going to be happy. Likewise, pride comes from our attachment. Or if we want to get something, and we will, due to attachment, we will justify deceiving others, we'll justify cheating others, we'll justify making sure the last one is ours, even if we know someone else wants it. So from attachments, so many other afflicted minds follow. Anger is quite different. So anger in itself is very destructive. Certainly when one's angry, one harms oneself in a great way as well as others. But anger, one, we recognize it very easily when it arises. Even its subclasses like annoyance and frustration immediately destroys our peace, and it's easy to recognize. But from anger, other afflicted minds aren't going to come. If we're angry at someone, we're not going to be attached to them in the next moment. Or from anger, pride is not going to arise. Anger may come from a pride, but pride is not going to come from anger. So anger in itself is very bad, but unlike attachment, it's easy to recognize, and a variety of other afflicted minds don't follow. So therefore, whilst both of these minds are very destructive, attachment is worse, as it's so much subtler and indirectly leads to so many other problems coming our way.
He's
sitting here now and you may hear, okay, I understand. Anger destroys my peace and makes me unhappy. Attachment, when it's strong and dominates, that also it's clear that it's at harms, or attachment, even when it's weaker, leading to other afflictions. I can see this. But to say that all my suffering comes from the afflicted minds, maybe you're not so convinced, because if you think, for example, if you enjoy exercise or sport, and you're at the gym and you're exercising, but you get a bit carried away, then afterwards the body aches. Or if one is studying, and so maybe we're studying the Dharma or reading a book, so this is good to do. But our body starts to ache, or we get tired afterwards. So one may think, hang on, all my suffering doesn't come from afflicted minds. Afflicted minds certainly cause suffering, but can it be said that all my suffering comes from them? So when we say all our suffering comes from afflicted minds, how should we then understand that in terms of physical ailments? So even when one is, say, engaging in virtue, such as meditating on these teachings, we know that our body starts to ache very quickly. If it's not our back, then it's our legs, and if it's neither of those, it's our bum. So the body aches very quickly. And it may seem strange because we're engaging in virtue, but our body does quickly suffer. So the reason that we would still say that that pain comes from the afflictions is because of the root cause from which our body came, from how we attained this body. So this body itself, this samsaric body, this naturally changes, it naturally degenerates, naturally problems come to it. And this is because of the afflicted mind, and in particular it comes from attachment. And the reason why attachment in particular is pointed to here is because this body came about due to our parents having attachment for each other, and thereby conception followed. So conception followed from attachment. So the cause of conception was the attachment of our parents. And then birth comes, so from the Buddhist perspective, birth comes from the moment of conception. And then again we say birth from the womb. But birth is from the moment of conception. And so at that moment, this body was acquired because of the attachment of our parents. So therefore, when we are born, and the body is a true suffering. When we looked at the Four Noble Truths a couple of days ago, we saw that the physical aggregate, the body, is a true suffering. It's a true suffering because it comes from an afflicted mind, the mind of attachment, and therefore it is pervaded by suffering. And therefore, if we sit too long, we ache. If we lie down too long, we ache. If we stand still too long, we ache. Whatever we do, the body complains. Problems come, difficulties come. So now we've heard how all our suffering does come from our afflicted minds, whether it's mental or physical suffering. It comes from our own afflictions, or comes from the afflicted minds. So how does one destroy the afflicted minds? No external phenomenon can destroy the afflicted minds. There's no object that can overcome our attachment or our anger or our ignorance. The only way to overcome afflicted minds is through developing contrary minds, through meditation. Meditation is the only way to destroy the afflicted minds, to destroy suffering. So to be able to engage in meditation, One needs a mind to meditate, and the mind needs a physical basis. And amongst the various bases or realms within samsara, it's only that of a human or a god that is able to engage in meditation. An animal cannot meditate. An animal cannot study the Buddha Dharma and thereby meditate on it. So one has to have the basis of a rebirth as a human or as a god with all the required good conditions to be able to study and meditate on the Buddha Dharma and thereby destroy the afflictions. Now we're all human beings, so we have this possibility to do it and even do it in this very life. But to do it in this very life is difficult, and if we don't succeed in destroying our afflictions completely in this life, then we need to continue in our future life, in our next life. So therefore, in our next life we need, once again, to have a rebirth as a human or as a god, and therefore we need to create the causes for that. And that's what we heard about this afternoon, how to create the causes for the rebirth, a good rebirth. It's practices of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyous perseverance. So therefore, the being who's striving for liberation, for freedom from samsara in its entirety, the freedom from suffering in its entirety, shares the same practices with the being of the small capacity, but does so with the motivation to continue to do those practices until liberation is attained. So they practice generosity and ethical conduct and patience and joyous perseverance so as to have a good rebirth, so as to continue practicing until liberation is attained. So therefore, there are these practices in common with a being of small capacity. So we've heard now of the cause of our suffering, our afflicted minds, and that to overcome our afflicted minds one needs to meditate. So now how does one overcome the afflicted minds through meditation? Well, there are two routes one takes in meditation. One is to overcome, to eliminate the afflicted mind, such as attachment and anger, on a temporary basis. And the second is to destroy them completely. So the difference being, when they maybe you can say, destroyed on a temporary basis or suppressed, means they will arise again. But when they're destroyed completely, then one is liberated. They can never arise again. So first of all, to suppress the afflictions. Then one would meditate thinking about the faults of the afflictions. So one would start thinking perhaps on attachment and seeing that and generate the understanding that if one is attached to other people or to objects, this mind of attachment only leads to further problems. Problems for yourself, problems for others. Problems for yourself, such as your mind becoming dominated by this desire for the other person or for the object, and therefore thinking of nothing else, and thinking of deceitful ways and engaging in maybe deceitful ways or even getting angry because of the attachment. Then seeing strongly the faults of this afflicted mind, making a commitment to guard the mind and not allow the mind to come under the influence of attachment. And similarly with anger, seeing the faults of anger that how destroys one's own inner peace and leads to problems for others, because one expresses it even if one's quiet, one's face shows the anger and thereby brings about disharmony with others, disturbs the mental peace of others too. So then one makes a commitment not to get angry today. So in this way, one can temporarily suppress the afflictions. So first, just to correct something I said a couple of segments ago. So when we sing that the faults are the afflicted minds, and so to abandon them, we need to meditate. So there are two methods that we can go. So here I made an error. So the one method is to suppress the afflictions, and the second then is to temporarily overcome them. So it was those two. It was nothing about ultimately overcome them. Again, I hasn't mentioned that yet. So to either temporarily overcome the afflictions or to suppress them. And then a moment ago, you spoke about suppressing them. And now we'll look at how to temporarily overcome the afflictions. So in other words, it's a stronger method than the one we just heard before. So with starting with the mind of attachment. So here in meditation, we call to mind this object that we find desirable. And whether it's a person or a material object, we think in the same way. So the mind of attachment has exaggerated the qualities of this object. So we think of it as overly pleasurable, as overly, therefore it's overly desirable. So we need to look at it with a bit more of the light of reality and see its faults as well. So let's say it's a person that we have strong attachment for. So let's say his personality is wonderful, he seems like a kind and generous person. We need to remind ourselves that while he may well have these good qualities, that this isn't how he always is, this is not how he only is. He also has other undesirable characteristics. He may sometimes, like all of us, get a bit angry, a bit annoyed, etc. And in this way, bring a bit more reality to this mind of attachment. And the same with an object, something that we see as really desirable and we want to purchase. We then also need to think about the faults of that object, such as how expensive it may be and how much we have to save up for it, or how we'll only use it for a short time and we'll want then something else, for example, if it's clothing. So this desire that we feel for it is not going to be satisfied. So here we need to think about the faults of the object. And through seeing the faults of the object, then the desire will be reduced. And then in terms of anger, so here, with anger, we need to catch the mind of anger before it arises, certainly before it's strong and dominates us. So let's say there's someone we don't like, and we know we're likely to meet them in the day, maybe it's a colleague at work. So in our meditation, we call this person to mind and the kind of feeling that usually arises when we just see them. And then we train our mind, how can I respond more skillfully? So here we think about this person. And we think that this person, just like me, only wants to experience happiness. But just like me, experiences problem after problem after problem. They are suffering. And they have a right to happiness. just like I have a right to happiness, but they are also suffering. And when they are perhaps talking, they bully me or they look down on me, whatever it is we don't like about them, they are doing this because they are unhappy. So this way we develop love for this suffering being, we develop compassion for this suffering being. And training our minds like this in meditation, when we later meet them, certainly the annoyance will start to arise within us. But immediately if we're mindful, or if we're using the mind of introspection, we call back, or recall, sorry, the meditation of the morning, and we think, we generate love for this person, compassion for this person. And that will prevent anger from arising. So this is how these are ways that we can train our mind so as to temporarily overcome the afflictions. And a further technique to temporarily overcome afflictive minds such as attachments and anger is to separate ourselves from the object. So either physically or mentally, to not think about it anymore. Maybe distract ourselves so our train of thought is broken and we're moving on to something else. Or if it's an object we're around with, again, object always refers to person, or usually refers to person or thing. So whether it's a person or a material object, if we're attached to it or angry towards it, separate ourselves from it and distract our mind, put our mind in another direction. And that will also temporarily calm our mind, distract our mind. So we've very briefly looked at only not even a handful of some of the antidotes to the afflictions that one can cultivate so as to temporarily overcome the afflictions. But now, the third thing, so we've spoken about suppressing and temporarily, the third way is now how to completely or ultimately overcome the afflictions. So to do that, one needs to cut the afflictions at their root so that none of them can no longer arise. So to do that, we need to develop two other minds. We need to develop the mind of concentration or the mind of calm abiding, the mind that holds an object single-pointedly. And then secondly, we need the mind of wisdom. These two minds are required or imperative so as to be able to cut the root of the afflictions and ensure that they no longer can arise. So the mind of concentration is a single-pointed mind, a mind that holds an object without distraction. The mind of wisdom. So the wisdom is what is the word we always use, but it's not as wisdom as in being wise. It's a mind that is an investigative mind, an analytical mind. So it's minds that we use all day, every day. So in this context, it's a mind that analyzes the nature of the object. But again, whether it's a person or a material thing, it's a mind that analyzes the nature of the object. So with these two together, concentration and wisdom, one is able to cut the root of all the afflictions and therefore destroy the afflictions together with their seeds.
나는 신의 띵에 삼된 주류를 신의 비용도 간다다, 만족에 능빈하들 공자다되다, 이래, 되사되다, 삼된 띵에 되사되다, 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 되사되다,
你的呀不必打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不打呀不
三五十五就公文件了，对吧？那贵州厂呢？厂也有个东西，厂那我退也得要嘛，是吧？说是三万的，然后这退呢，退也得个公小三五十五就做了一下，就什么？现在三米线大概一个跨度多难呀？明年卖呀，就是三千五那时候你吃过的，年年的三千五那天月薪呢，特别多，那都女的啊，干嘛要嘛的女？在这干些别别的，女的大家是啥？女的还是大家是女的？刚把奶啊，什么奶不够嘛的？现在女的吧，什么钱？羡慕家，人家给羡慕家，就这些东西。那些当过上过的那是干的了嘛？都是干的这些，你干不是多少钱的呢？以后的话，这逐步的呢，就这样随便拿一个，再接个拿，刚把奶再拿，比如说，那你的呀，那是你不咯？人家给奖励，奖励，奖励，就是要是人家训练些东西，上面你注意的，现在羡慕家干嘛？每天每天干的这些东西呢，很羡慕家。经过这些，他现在啊，反正就那如果这些啊，不过是干这个啥，这边呢，现在你就你个是干这，这边呢，你干嘛的？如果没得事，就算人家给上面定的是投标准，现在别把这弄成你不起不差了，人家给你不起不差个，你要么就给他，这些接不接的，以前写的不行，我写的别的，干的多的，你要么我写的干的什么多的。这些良心，可能我干那些东西接不接的，人家给些女的全部定的定的，这些接不接的，男生就不好做活了。就算身体良心，我那还高头，身体等于东西才做活吧。就算东西做的多不落地的，羊毛不买不出来的，我那买不出来的地方的。就算定的是啥子，定的是那些来给你搞钱的，我是买不出来的，买不出来的。
Don't have too much time, so we'll talk very quickly about these minds of concentration and wisdom. So concentration usually is a mind of single points of concentration. This usually develops as you are here. We those of you on cushions are sitting on the seat of concentration, as it's called. But concentration, of course, can be achieved whether one's on a chair or on a cushion. So it's usually So to achieve concentration, one usually develops it on an image of an object. So concentration can be utilized on either an object or an analytical mind. So that's for a discussion for another day. But just to look at it in brief, the easiest way or the way that most people will develop concentration is they'll take an image of a Buddha, perhaps a card with a photograph of a Buddha image or an actual statue, and they'll look at it carefully and get to see the details and get a very clear understanding of the proportionality and the colors and the size and the shapes, etc., so that they understand this very clearly and they can turn the card upside down or put the statue out of sight, but they will still be able to imagine the Buddha image. So first they develop this familiarity, then they visualize the image before them. So they'll sit with the eyes partially closed, but visualizing the image before them. Here there are many stages to the meditation, and the yogi should progress through these stages, developing her concentration until she reaches the point where the visualization is so vivid and clear, she would almost feel she could reach out, touch the Buddha before her. So, of course, there isn't a Buddha before her. This is the power of the concentration that has been developed. And so then the attainment of calm abiding is marked by the attainment of physical and mental bliss of pliancy. So what that means is that one's body is pervaded by the feeling of bliss. One's mind is pervaded by the feeling of bliss. And that not only brings, of course, great physical and mental happiness, but the but one's body and mind becomes serviceable. So what that means is when one sits, one experiences no aches and pains. One's mind, so one doesn't have physical obstacles such as that. One's mind is blissful, so one's mind too is not creating obstacles. One isn't feeling bored and frustrated because we've been meditating for weeks, months or years trying to cultivate this Buddha image, but the mind now is blissful too. So this is what comes with, this marks the attainment of single-pointed concentration. And why this is so important is that this mind of single-pointed concentration, is incredibly powerful. And this powerful mind is required for the meditation or for the mind of wisdom to be supremely effective. So wisdom is the mind we all have. It's our analytical mind, our investigative mind, our mind that looks at what is the result of this? What is the result of that? How should I go about something so as to achieve a result? So this is a mind we all have and we all use throughout the day. But in our context here of abandoning the afflictions, wisdom is looking at the nature of reality, coming to understand what reality is. So this is something now we can do, but to attain the realization of sufficient strength, so to abandon the afflictions together with their roots, we need concentration. We need single points of concentration or the mind of calm abiding. So to talk then briefly on wisdom. So wisdom investigates the nature of reality. It investigates how the afflicted mind actually exists. Do they exist in the way that they appear or not? So this is what wisdom investigates, analyzes. And it comes to understand reality directly. So to do this, for wisdom to be, we can meditate in this way now, but for wisdom to actually realize reality directly, one has to have developed single-pointed concentration first. To talk a little more about calm abiding. So, to develop calm abiding, we spoke about using a Buddha image, but just to get a feel for what needs to be done, you can do this meditation with any image. It doesn't have to be a Buddha image. So if you think of something that you like, you therefore know it well. So for example, your mobile phone. Hopefully you like your mobile phone, but you certainly know what it looks like. So you don't need to stare at your mobile phone for hours to know what it looks like. You already do. So if you were to close your eyes and visualize the mobile phone before you, this is easy. And you can do it and it'll be recognizable as your mobile phone. But then you hold there, and a few things will happen. It will start to perhaps move, change color, change size, anything can happen. And this is because our mind is not powerful. Our mind is actually particularly weak, and in particular, it's not stable. So trying to hold any object, you may well have tried with your breath, but let's say this visualized mobile phone. We will see in a couple of moments, we're thinking of something else. And that shows the lack of stability of our mind. And until that stability starts to reduce, we're not even going to see it. The phone changes color or change size because we are so very easily distracted. So this is, in brief, how one starts with, how one can develop calm abiding. You visualize an object and you do it repeatedly, repeatedly, so that one's mind slowly becomes more concentrated and you can hold the object in a way that is how the object looks, an accurate way, for longer and longer periods. To summarize what you've looked at in this evening is we spoke about the path of the being of intermediate capacity, or the mental paths that the being of intermediate capacity needs to cultivate. So the starting point is those that are shared with the being of small capacity, but done with the motivation of the being of intermediate capacity. So such a being knowing the need to have a good basis in order to practice the Dharma, will want to attain good rebirth, such as a human, and not fall into the lower realms. So therefore, will do the practices of the being of small capacity, but with the motivation for liberation from samsara. So that's the common practices. But the practices then that are not shared with the being of small capacity is to meditate on the sufferings of samsara in its entirety, in particular the sufferings of the happy migrations, the humans and gods. Because what is shared with the being of small capacity is an understanding of the sufferings of the lower realms and the strong desire not to be born there. So here the meditation is specifically, or primarily rather, to do with the sufferings of the human realm, because this is what we have experience of. And one needs to come eventually to the conclusion, but by coming to the conclusion that means one's mind is moved, one experiences a powerful emotion in one's meditation, that there is no meaningful happiness to be found anywhere within samsara. There is no rebirth or resources or wealth or anything to be found within samsara that leads to lasting happiness or that is lasting happiness. There is no lasting happiness to be found as long as one remains bound, remains imprisoned within samsara. So that's the first practice that is not shared with a being of small capacity. Then the second, having given rise to the clear understanding that samsara is pervaded by suffering, one then looks at the cause of one's suffering, and that is these very afflictive minds. These are the rope that bind us within samsara, keep us trapped within samsara. So therefore, one gives rise to the wish, having seen then that it's the afflictive minds that trap us, one gives rise to the wish to destroy these afflictive minds. Not just to suppress them, not to temporarily overcome them, but to completely destroy them. Then thirdly, one then moves one's meditation onto the practices of generosity, ethical conduct, joyous patience, and joyous perseverance that we heard about before, and with the motivation to attain liberation, and then in particular, concentration and wisdom. So these two of concentration and wisdom are not required by the being of small capacity, but are essential for the being of intermediate capacity. Yeah, concentration can be developed as generally in the Buddhist tradition, would be developed on a Buddha image, but it can be developed on any mental image or even on an analytical meditation. But you decide for yourself or in conjunction with your teacher, and you develop concentration, strengthening the mind, so as to be able to have so that your meditation of wisdom, understanding reality, is that much more powerful, all in order to attain liberation from suffering, freedom from suffering. Yes. So we'll finish here for tonight, but we have time for questions. Certainly in the stupa, they'll probably be continuing for a little while. So if you have some questions, feel free to ask. If you want to go, feel free to leave.
So that's a quick question.
Please.
Might be a stupid one. They talk about it to be reborn as a human or a god. I understand that all the pleasure in the god realm, but spiritually it's no meaning at all. So what's the point of being born a god?
That's a good question. So there's a lot of pleasure in the god realm, but spiritually no meaning at all. So what's the point?
My understanding is no meaning. So that's,
Okay. Dene, lava kena, dene, de pendo kare yarebe, kare, la kena, pendo yomare, ne samgiru kare insa, de dönme de, mi gikam, di nangsi ne ne gosam, dene kare jene, la kye gido pedang dobo kye yarebe.
Ve, hala rimu uro, mile, chike,
So the main answer here is that just like amongst humans, there are many different types of gods. So amongst humans, types maybe isn't the word for humans, but humans have very different circumstances. Some are very conducive to the Dharma practice, some certainly are not. I may have a human rebirth, but it's not at all conducive for Dharma practice. It's the same with gods. So there are some or maybe one existence amongst the gods that is very conducive for Dharma practice, but others that are not. But the main difference then between humans and gods is they have far more merit than we do. So, far more merit than the gods do. The gods do. So if one has a rebirth as a god that has the fortune to practice the Dharma, they're doing so on the basis of a lot of merit. So that's a good rebirth. That is a good rebirth. That one in particular.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Yes, please. Following on from that one, how can I make sure that, well, if I do all my Dharma practice and I apply myself as much as possible with the concentration and so on, how can I make sure that I will have either a precious human rebirth,
mm-hmm.
or one of those particular god rebirths, rather than just collect lots of merits and become next life as a god and but no practice.
Yes, good question. So if I practice well in this life and create good causes for the future rebirths to go well, how can I be sure that I don't just attain a human rebirth or a god rebirth, but where one doesn't meet the Dharma and doesn't be able to practice the Dharma? Tene tene nanga agewa yapo sakila sopa ini kewa jema chitena dekam la kekire ini milion rupise tokki mare ini mito kire milion rupise tokki mare ini kewa di gewa yapo sakso tene kanes gewa yapo sakpe kapla milion rupise tokki ki kyu kapu so tokki rebe milion rupise
tokki JSRD, and the Dirwa, to that Turimsuya Chichibita. Then Milu Rimuchi Labu Karelana Dirwa.
Milu Rimuchi Labaso, in the Dundape, Milaso.
Mila, that you give Mikiwa, Mikashepe, Kamashu, Yena Jungurwa. Then you give me Penjora, Zayato, Kamaki, or Toshi, the Nitia, Miliki, and Children, and Jerachiko. Nimiliting at the Mukoko Koyan.
去一些赛季，去一些很远噻，去一些国外比较远的。反正去一些很远的，你原来说这个去一些跟专业的远的，今天是比较少。实际上，今天有没有的来呀？的，个人啦，出中村呀，啊，那出中村呀的，那我们就比较远的些。什么大呀的，专业的些，谁不管别的，就是不要管他啦，今天个，那个是我们想到菜呀啦。 这些，我们这里做苗子，这里做苗子的，确实啊，专业些的，如果专业的话，这些，实际上这些个啥物事，他这些个做那么啥啥一点的，也会啊。实际上这些个决定啊，这个他，他这么多那么的，那么几年，那么的话，去去提拔去，这里也没那么讲，那个地方啊，确实要搞好，不要说，没那么讲苗子，这些那么的，我那我们那么讲，我那么讲，我那么讲，这些那么的，确实。
所以去就好，快点。其实，初中、进八档、学过工、甚至中，现在呢，给你那个叫我起码有要会托，那么，俺那边，那么轻易的点吧，那么专门嘛一把，那么轻易点吧，去啊，应该是，才去，确实没得劲，然后就我是，没能点的，然后也没能点，你，但进步，初中学过，甚至，现在没能，应该是从哪，你叫我起码。
So it's a good question, because there are certainly many beings who are born and they are healthy, they have good material conditions, they're born as humans, but there's no Dharma in the world, or they have no interest in the Dharma in the world. So there's that element that is missing. So what we require in our future rebirths is good material conditions, a good basis of such as a human being. We need to be healthy and sufficient wealth. But we also need to be somewhere where the teachings exist, where the Buddha Dharma exists, and there are teachers teaching that, and we need to have the interest to go to those teachings and be inspired and want to keep going to the teachings. So those characteristics, when they come together, are called a precious human rebirth. So we haven't used that term tonight, we've spoken about a human rebirth, but what she's specifically and correctly asking about is a precious human rebirth. So this is attained in the same ways as we heard before. One guards one's ethical conduct so as to attain a human rebirth. One practices generosity so as to ensure that there are good material conditions in that rebirth and a good lifespan and health. And patience, similarly, so that one is healthy and has good relations with others. And then one practices joyous perseverance to make those causes very powerful. But also a joyous perseverance, because one is taking delight in engaging in virtue, this is going to be relating to having an interest in the Dharma. So then one is taking delight in one's Dharma practice, whether it's one's meditation, whether it's one receiving teachings. We generating a mind that becomes joyous when we're reading a Dharma book, joyous when we're hearing a teaching, joyous when we're sitting down to meditate, joyous when we're helping others, etc. So this creates the cause for the extra components, the extra characteristic you're asking about. And then in addition to this, one more thing that we haven't mentioned tonight, and that is to make specific prayers. So we pray maybe in our dedication prayers every night, that in all our future rebirths, we stay under the care of our kind and precious teachers. We take birth in a land where they have chosen to appear, where they are teaching the Dharma, and that in all future lives, we meet them and we immediately develop faith in them. We receive teachings from them, and that we are inspired by those teachings, and we practice those teachings in accordance with the advice that our teachers are giving us. And in particular, in this prayer, that we pray that we come under the care of our teachers of this life, or that we continue to meet authentic, genuine teachers, not false teachers, false prophets, but genuine teachers. We receive teachings from them, we're inspired by these teachings and we put them into practice, and that we are able to fulfill the heart wishes of our teachers by achieving the goals of those teachings they give us. So that's the one extra step.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Okay, then thank you very much.
So page 100. So